to the hotline for the first time today as we welcome in a friend of the show, gentleman we've had on many, many times before, Negro League baseball historian Ike Brooks joining us right now. Ike, thank you so much for the time. How are you today?
I'm very good, very good. I hope the same is true for you and Rocco.
Well, so far, not too bad. Knock on wood. We're watching it rain outside the studio here, but that's okay. We're safe here in the studios, and a lot of great things to talk about. I know in conjunction with the Josh Gibbs Foundation, Lifeline Sports, and many other organizations, you're hosting a pair of presentations this month, and I want to begin with this Saturday's on the East-West All-Star Games. What made these games so great?
These games were great because they pulled together some of the best black and Latino baseball players who were not at the time allowed to play in Major League Baseball.
Now, this started back in 1933, and as I understand it, this was kind of the brainchild of a gentleman named Gus Greenlee. What do we know about Gus?
Boy, you've done your homework. That's very good. Yes, Gus was the owner of a team called the Pittsburgh Crawfords. He did a couple things. One, he unified the Negro National League, which was kind of floundering after the death of the founder of that, Rube Foster. And Gus was looking at a way in which Negro League baseball could get through the Depression years and also work out a way for people to see baseball, because there was a disagreement among league officials and about a Negro League World Series. So his brainchild was to gather the very best of all the players, play in Comiskey Park in Chicago, and that event emerged as the single greatest sporting event in the black community in this country. The only thing that rivaled it would have been a prize fight that would feature a guy like Joe Louis.
Ike, why was it so important that these games were played at Comiskey Park in Chicago?
It was what I'd call a central location. People could get there. You could get there by rail, and you can get there by car. And most people would travel there. There's a quote from one of the black writers. He wrote for the Baltimore Afro-American, Sam Lacey, said people just traveled and spent the entire few days in Chicago, not only celebrating Negro League baseball, but just a celebration as almost a picnic kind of environment.
Ike, can you shed some light on how the voting was done here as well? Because it wasn't necessarily a league-wide vote. There was also a lot of geographical input on this as well, it seems like.
It was purely a fan vote. And the newspapers that were used to conduct this vote were the Pittsburgh Courier and the Chicago Defender. And they would let fans select who they thought they would like to see on the field of play. And to give you an idea, I'll just pick one game. And I know the star of that game is your favorite guy, Mule Suttles, right? Because you always wonder, why is he named him Mule? Okay, but in the 1935 All-Star Game, there were 12 players on the field who subsequently are in Cooperstown. Okay, and I'll rattle off some names for you, guys who played for the East. A guy named Martin DeHigo, he's a pitcher. Leon Day, who we're going to do a presentation on later this month, another pitcher. Ray Dandridge, who played second base, but he's most known for playing third base. Biz Mackey was a catcher, and a guy named Judd Wilson, who was a third baseman. Five players in the Hall of Fame. That's the East. The West had players like Cool Papa Bell, Josh Gibson, Mule Suttles, Oscar Charleston, Turkey Stearns, Buck Leonard, and Willie Wells. They were on the field together in one of those East-West All-Star Classics. 1935.
Wow. An impressive list of players. No question about that. Wow. Yeah. Again, Ike Brooks, Negro League baseball historian, joining us here on Bullseye on the Afternoon. All year long, they're doing special Zoom presentations in conjunction with the Josh Gibson Foundation, Lifeline Sports, and many others, celebrating the 100th anniversary of the Negro Leagues. And you mentioned a guy we're going to discuss here in a few seconds here, and Leon Day. You're having a presentation called A Day Worth Remembering. Now, Leon Day is a guy that may not necessarily be a household name, but he was quite the player back in the day, a two-way player at that. He was an excellent pitcher and a position player. Well, why do you think a guy like him kind of got overlooked?
Well, you had another pitcher in Negro League baseball that everyone knew, and that's Satchel Paige. Leon Day, not unlike Larry Doby, was a very quiet, reserved, low-key individual. He even in stature, he was not that large. He's 5'8". And this guy could pitch. And as you said, when he wasn't on the mound, they put him on the field. Now, those who may have visited the Negro League Baseball Museum in Kansas City will note they have what they refer to as a field of legends. And they placed the 9 position players that they thought were the very best in Negro League baseball. Leon Day is on that as a right fielder.
Wow.
Yeah.
And if you look at his career numbers, too, I mean, awfully impressive. A 64-game winner, an ERA just below 3. And he also played for a handful of teams in the Negro Leagues, and he was inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame just before he passed away, right?
Yes. In fact, he made an appearance here in Cleveland. And I had the distinction in 1994 to escort Mr. Day onto Jacobs Field, as it was named at the time. It was celebration of Larry Doby, the time when his number was retired by the Indians. But Mr. Day, you wouldn't have thought, A, that he was as great a pitcher as he was, because he didn't just flaunt it. And the humility of it all, of him at least being on a baseball field prior to his induction and his knowledge. In fact, he had to be notified on his hospital bed and then died days later.
Wow. And you mentioned humility, and I think that certainly can go back to the early stages of his life. I mean, he had really a kind of an interesting upbringing and an interesting history as well, as a guy who stopped going to school so he could play baseball, and it worked out really well for him.
Yes. In fact, here's something I have in common with Mr. Day, which I did not know at the time. While he was born in Alexandria, Virginia, he grew up in Baltimore. I, too, am a Baltimorean. And it turns out that you mentioned he left high school. He went to the same high school I attended. It was a different building, but the same name, Frederick Douglass High School. And he joined the Baltimore Black Sox in 1934. So he would have been, 18 years old at the time.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's just an incredible story about an incredible guy. And, you know, I'm sure for you, like, that had to be a really cool experience to escort him onto the field on Jacobs Field some 25, 26 years ago.
Yes, it was. I still have the baseball. In fact, sitting there, I have a baseball that was signed by two of the best home run hitters in Cleveland Indians history, a guy named Bell and a guy named Tomey. And I walked out on the field with Leon Day, and when I took the rapid home, I was just smiling. I don't even think my feet touched the ground that day. That was my best day ever.
Well, and that's awfully tough to come down from, no question about that. Really, really cool experience. Well, Ike, I know you're giving the first presentation, and you guys are doing it with all the COVID-19 protocol over Zoom. How do we find out more about the sponsoring organizations and how to be a part of the presentation?
Okay, yeah. You need to log on to either the Josh Gibson Foundation, the Community Cup Classic Foundation, or Lifeline Sports. If that doesn't work for you, you can also log on to Margaret Reardon Marketing, LLC, and there should be a link there to take you to Eventbrite on either of those four websites, and there's a registration. These will occur at 10 a.m. Eastern Time. Come early, because we've been filling up. We've had people from as far away as Switzerland, the U.K., going east, and California going west.
Outstanding. So it sounds like it's been very well attended so far, and these are really interesting presentations. Ike, I know you guys have these going on throughout the rest of 2020. Always a pleasure to sit down and speak with you, and we'll definitely have you on again soon as more of these presentations come on us.
Look forward to it.
Thank you, Ike. Again, that's Ike Brooks, Negro League baseball historian, joining us here on Bullseye on the Afternoon. And, boy, Rocco, how